All right, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for coming to the session. I really appreciate you guys making the effort to be here at this session today right after lunchtime. You know, I know it's a tough hour. I even consider not coming myself, but here I am. So we're gonna be talking about Power BI Desktop. My name is Miguel Llopis. I'm a program manager working on the Power BI team at Microsoft, focusing primarily on Power BI connectivity, all data connectors, data preparation, and related feature set. Before actually going into the content, I wanted to ask a question to you guys, because you know I've been doing this session for the last year and a half, 2 years, since the very first preview versions of Power BI and Power BI Desktop. And as we evolve with the product and come to new conferences every few months, the audience also evolves along with it. We started by having to do sessions that talk primarily about what Power BI Desktop is and why would you even care about it, to actually now doing more of a deep dive, best practices, and that kind of content, because people have become more and more familiar with the product. So I wanted to ask you guys, how many of you are not already using Power BI and Power BI Desktop? All right, so everyone else is either using it or you're just taking a siesta right now. That's fine for me, either option. Okay, so what we're gonna do today, this is my guess that it's about a 50-50 split actually between people who already know desktop and people who doesn't. So what we're gonna do, we're gonna start with the first set of the session. We're gonna do an end-to-end overview of the product. We'll throw a little bit of tips and tricks here and there as well. We'll do an end-to-end demo. And that will get folks up to speed with the overall purpose and goal of Power BI Desktop as a tool. The second two-thirds of the session are all gonna be demos. I'm gonna be doing a lot of deep dive demos about concrete scenarios with the product, things that you're probably already doing today, but if you don't, maybe you'll find something useful, and then when you get back home, after you sleep and so on, you'll actually go and make something useful out of this session. So that'll be my goal. And the last little bit here is gonna be just show you something that nobody else has seen before, like a few demos that are features that are coming to the product over the next few months. So that since you make the effort to come here, you actually get out of it something that's very exclusive to your experience here. All right, so most of you already know Power BI, you mentioned, but really like 10,000 feet overview of Power BI. Power BI, it's a SaaS business intelligence service that Microsoft has created. It's been active for the last, I think, over a year and 3 months now. And it basically allows people to very easily get started. In just a couple of minutes, you can sign up for the service, go to powerbi.com, get signed up, and you can start finding valuable insights from your data. So if you already have SaaS services accounts for things like Google Analytics, Salesforce, Dynamics, Marketo, QuickBooks, like you name it, we have, I think, 55 plus content packs, now we call them apps, but yeah, that actually give you out-of-the-box dashboards and reports, and it's really easy to for you to just find them, add them to your Power BI account, and then you immediately get something that it's really valuable and insightful for you, because it actually talks about your data, it talks about your service accounts. Now, if you actually want to create something more elaborate, you want to create your own custom reports, maybe combine data from SaaS services with data that you have on-prem, from your own SQL Server, AS, any other data source. We support over 65 data sources in the desktop today, giving you connectivity to pretty much everything you can imagine, either through out-of-the-box connector or through interoperability. We do support standards like REST APIs. We support OData. We support XML, ODBC. We're going to be adding ODB support soon as well. So in one way or another, you'll be able to get your data in. And the moment you have your data into the product, then the fun begins, because you start being able to do all sorts of advanced modeling operations, data preparation capabilities, creating the exact report you want with lots of formatting options. So we'll cover all of that in depth. We're going to be focusing on this piece for the session today. But then once you've created your report, your ultimate goal will actually be to share that with other users in your company, in your organization, who will actually consume those reports. And then that's when you publish back to the Power BI service, you create these dashboards around them, and then you'll ensure that data is kept up to date through the Power BI gateways. If you have some you know, hybrid reports that go against on-prem data as well, you would use the central piece with Power BI gateways. And finally, your end users, your report and dashboard consumers will just consume this through a few different means that we have with Power BI. We have mobile applications, and we also have, of course, the website. So that's kind of, you know, the 10,000 feet overview of what Power BI is. Now let's talk a bit more about Power BI Desktop. As we were saying, Power BI Desktop is the primary report authoring tool for Power BI content. It's optimized for, you know, creating interactive reports that allow you to like click and do cross-filtering and cross-highlighting of items, explore your reports, really interact with your data in a way that's very compelling. If you're familiar, actually, let me ask this question. How many of you are familiar with the Power BI or Power add-ins that we created for Excel a few years ago? Power Query, Power Pivot, Power View. All right, quite a few people. This is kind of a blinding light, but actually, you know why people do this when they want to look further? Because if they did this, they wouldn't see anything. All right, so yeah, Power BI Desktop combines the get data and data preparation capabilities of Power Query, the data modeling and in-memory BI analytics power of Power Pivot, and all of the visualization capabilities of Power View. But then we put all of that on steroids and much better integrated, and that's how we actually came up with Power BI Desktop, which you can download completely for free, install it in your Windows machine in either 64-bit or 32-bit architectures. All right, so at the end of all, as we were saying, you'll just publish these reports back into the Power BI service, and then you'll share them with other users. Now, the last point here is very, very important. We update the product every month, and we release lots of features. This is just a quick breakdown of what we did over the last 3 months. We were actually kind of slowed down over the last 3 months, but still fit in the slide, so that's kind of cool. But just to give you, a sense for the velocity and the pace of innovation that we have in the product. There's a September update. It's going to be coming later this week, so there will be a new column here virtually, and I'm going to be pointing out some of the features that I'm going to show that are only available in that September update. All right, so I had a couple more slides. I'll just go real quick through this, but just wanted to give you a quick overview about each of the areas. Connect and data preparation, we mentioned earlier, over 65 data sources. We have two different connectivity modes. We have import, which basically means ETL data, extract, transform, and load data into your local data model in your Power BI desktop file in memory. We also have direct query. Direct query allows you to still do certain transformation operations and filters and that kind of stuff, but then it actually does not require to load data locally into your data model in the desktop. Instead, what it does is that it creates a virtual link with the underlying data source, and then as you create visuals and you interact with them and you apply filters or group operations like aggregates and that kind of stuff, it will actually issue live queries, or that's why it's called direct queries, against the underlying data source, and then it will round trip the data and just bring the data that it needs to actually render the visual. So that's pretty compelling when you work on big data scenarios these days, definitely. The third one here is probably important for those of you who raise your hand about the Power add-ins in Excel. We do have a capability that's called import Excel workbook contents that will actually take an Excel workbook that contains a set of queries, a Power Pivot data model, maybe a few Power View pages on it, and it will convert that into a Power BI desktop report. That way, if you created a few reports in the past in Excel with the Power add-ins and you would like to get started with Power BI desktop, you don't need to do all of that by hand. We just give you a quick wizard, and in a matter of a few seconds, we'll actually convert that file for you. And then, of course, you can start augmenting that file, that report, with additional features that are only in the Power BI desktop these days. Okay, so we'll cover in relative depth the shape and combined data capabilities that we have with the query editor, the connect and data prep capabilities in the product. And behind the scenes, you'll also see a little bit of a very powerful query language that we have, which is the M language. And I won't go very deep in the M language today. I'm more of a point-and-click person, but you'll see many things that are actually empowered through the UI, but those are just kind of the tip of the iceberg when you think about the whole capabilities of the underlying formula language. The second big piece is the data modeling and analytics component. So for those of you familiar with Power Pivot, this is using the same in-memory BI engine. This is the Vertipack or X-Velocity engine that shipped in Excel a few years ago. Now it's evolved and it's shipping inside the desktop as well. It allows you to do all sorts of advanced modeling operations, like you can load multiple tables, you can manage relationships between them, you can create measures and calculated columns, you have all of the power of the DAX language behind the scenes. We recently added the automatic date time capabilities, so the moment you have a table with a date dimension on it, we will automatically create a date table for you, so you can do all sorts of automatic drill downs by year, month, quarter, and so on and so forth. We also have the notion of data types and categories, so you could do things like lat long and geography types. We have a lot of formatting options for things like currency and dates. Really just the ability to format the data and just like, you know, customize it so that it looks like the way you want, not just for your in-memory calculations, but also when you go and try to visualize all of this data in your reports in the form of labels and legends and all of that. We make it possible for you to make it look exactly like you want. The last point here is DAX editor with IntelliSense, which means we give you completions on editing of DAX formulas that's available within the report view, within the data view as well, for creating measures and calculated columns and tables. All right, I had another slide here about visuals, but nothing more visual than actually going and playing with the product. So let's go and do that. So this is Power BI Desktop. This is the first screen that I see when I launch the product. It shows me a few getting started videos and tutorials and useful resources for me to kind of ramp up with the product. What we're going to do is go and get some data. We're going to start a new report. This brings me to the Get Data dialog, and here's where you get all of these 65-plus data sources that we were talking about. We do support lots of different types of file formats, even things advanced like connecting to a folder and combining data across multiple files within a folder. Lots of database options, including some that we just shipped as preview or beta features like Redshift, Impala, Snowflake, and many others, of course. Azure, so being Microsoft product, of course, we have best-in-class connectivity to all Azure services that could possibly expose data today. And I'm sure there will be new ones coming, and we'll be adding them. So if you have one already back of your mind, we can talk about that later. A bunch of other online services. So these ones connect to what we were talking about before with the content packs in the Power BI service, like the Salesforce, ComScore, the MailChimp of the world. So we actually give you the equivalent connector in Power BI Desktop so that if the out-of-the-box content pack that you got in the service didn't meet all of your needs, you could actually be able to come to the desktop and create something custom that still brings data from those services and combines with other data sources as well. And then we have a few other connectors, including things like web for connectivity with web APIs, like REST APIs, scraping of HTML tables. We're going to show a couple of demos around that later. Things like SharePoint lists, OData, and some other sources over here. We're going to be connecting to OData feed to start today. And I'm going to go grab my URL for my favorite OData feed in the world, which is the Northwind OData service. This is the V4 version. How many of you use OData? All right, a few of you. All right, so this is an OData V4 feed, and the first thing that you actually see here is the list of feeds or entities exposed in this feed. I'm going to be picking a few of them, so as I select one, I get previews so that I can understand which data I'm actually selecting. One of the things, and this is the first September release feature that I'm going to disclose today, is the select related table buttons. We just added this for OData. It's coming this week, and it will work as long as you are using an OData V4 feed. So if I click it now, given I selected categories, it's actually go and discover related tables. In this case, there was only products. If I click it again, it's going to bring order details, and if I click again, it's going to bring orders. And then all I need to do is just pick customers, and that's all that I needed for the demo. So as you see, I'm very lazy, so I like to do these things, just like click, click, click. Don't even need to go find the checkbox. So I'll click load, and now we're actually, in this case with OData, we don't have a direct query option, so we're just importing the data for you. I could have clicked edit to go into the query editor and do some data preparation and filters before importing the data, but in this case, the data is already in the shape that I want, so I'm just loading it. And now I've landed in the report view. This is the main Power BI desktop window, and there's three different views. So right now I'm in the report view, and then we'll cover later on the data view and the relationships view as well. All right, so what do I have in the report view? A few interesting areas here. I have the fields pane, which basically exposes all of the tables that I've imported, and then I can drill down one level to actually find the fields or columns from each of those tables that I can then add into my report. And then I also have the visualizations pane, and I have formatting options as well for once I create a visual, I can then format it appropriately. So let's go into the fields pane, and we have the order details table. You see that I have unit price and quantity for each line of order, but I actually don't have the line total, and I don't have a total sales number, but that's actually what I want to visualize in my report. So I'm going to go and create a new column in this case, and I'm going to call it line total, and I'm going to do a unit price times quantity. No discounts today, sorry. Okay, so now we have line total, and I'm gonna go and create a measure that will actually do the sum of all of the line total so that I get my total sales. I'm gonna do new measure, this total sales, and this is sum of the thing I just created, which is line total. Okay, so now I have my measure and my calc column. I can drag my measure into the canvas. It defaults to this column chart, but I don't want that. I actually want a gauge. So I can turn this into a gauge. That's the visual I want, but of course I can do a lot of custom things here. For instance, I can come into the formatting pane and go into the title. I don't like the automatic title it gave, so I can say total sales with a space. Maybe I can make the color black and the background for the title. I can make it like yellow, make it center, a bit larger of a title. Okay, that's better. Maybe we throw some background color on the actual visual as well. So let's do this. Something you'll realize as I go through the session is that I have the worst taste for actually picking report colors. But it's just to exemplify how much you can do, like how much power the tool gives you that you could do the most awful report in the world. And it's just so easy to do. Okay, so a couple more formatting things we could do on the gates. We could define, for instance, a target. So we could go into the gates axis and customize the min and the max and the target. In this case, I'm going to just make it up by, say, like 1.5 million. All right, so now it's showing up there. And that way I can rate how am I doing compared to my target, right? Okay, let's do a different visual. Let's do a bar chart. Okay, and in this bar chart, we're going to look at sales by product category. So I'm going to just drop the category name. And then I'm going to pick the total sales and put them into the value. And that's how it looks. I could go through all of the ceremony around formatting again, but since I'm very lazy, I could just use the format painter. And that thing will apply the same magical and beautiful formatting options that I selected before. Could do a couple more here, though. For instance, I could pick data labels. And we see that they actually don't look right. So why is that? This is because actually the total sales measure that I had created here is not formatted properly. So I could come back, and rather than keeping it as a format general, I could just go and apply a dollar currency format, and that makes it look much better. Let me actually make that bigger so you get to see data labels. See, that starts looking better, right? All right, so let's do another one. Maybe we can do a tree map. Who doesn't like tree maps? All right, tree map is great so that you can see actual things like, for instance, what's the proportion between the value of a measure for a specific area. Like in this case, we're going to look at sales by category, and then within category, we're going to look at sales by a specific product, product name, product ID. And then you can see that compared to the overall sales. So we're going to be doing here the category name as the group. Then I'm going to go find my products table, and I'm going to do the product name as the details. And we go back to order details, and then I pick my total sales as the values. So that gives you an idea, right? That way we can see how beverages are maybe about like 20% of our overall product sales, and then you can see the breakdown by products. What else? We could do throw some legend in here so you get to see the actual, actually not the legend, sorry, my bad. I'm half asleep yet. Data labels. So I turn them on. Now I can see my data label sales next to it. And if I mouse over, I get a tooltip and I see the actual value for that specific category and product. Now we could do actually something more cool, which is even customize the tooltip. We have this region down here to actually provide different values for the tooltips, so they augment the information that you see on the visual. One thing we could do is drag total sales into the tooltips area as well. And now if I mouse over, you see that I have two total sales fields. So I get to customize the second one. I could do new calculation here, so I could do a quick calc. And that's going to bring up the quick calc menu. Right now, we only expose percent of grand total, but we're going to be adding more and more things here. But that one already, oh. Sorry. What did I do? OK. Well, I don't know why it did that. But now that I come back, it actually shows me what I wanted, which is the last field in the tooltip, it actually shows total sales. And you see how it actually flipped here as well. That's a weird bug. All right, shipping tomorrow. Cool. So let's go and format this again with my format painter. And all right, so now you know how to actually customize tooltips, do quick calcs, and do a bunch of other things to customize your visuals. But what a better way to customize your visuals than actually create a custom visual yourself or use one that somebody else created. We do have the notion of custom visuals in Power BI. If you go to powerbi.com/visuals, you'll get to this site that it actually documents how you can create visuals yourself. We use a JavaScript library behind the scenes. There's the D3.js library for creating visuals. You could do all sorts of crazy things with your visuals as long as you meet a very few interface points that Power BI then needs to actually configure the visual and render the visual within the report view. Everything else is fair game. So you can see here a bunch of visuals created by the community. Things like the Spark lines, the Striped browser, the cluster map, facets, and all sorts of, you know, crazy visualizations and really cool stuff you can do, like hierarchy slicers and stuff. For each of those, you can actually download the visual, which will actually download a PVIVs file, which then you import into Power BI desktop to add it to your report. And you could even download a sample, which is a full-fledged Power BI desktop file, PVIX file, that would show how to use the visual with some relevant data set and so on. So from all of these visuals, the one that I had to pick is the aquarium. It's my favorite one. We're going to be visualizing some fish in our report because I always think that data looks fishy, and this perfectly illustrates the point. So let's actually go download the visual. It asked me for some consent on that, you know, like no fish were killed in this custom visual. And then it asked me to save. I save it locally, and now I have my PVIVs file downloaded. So when I come back to Power BI Desktop, if you go to the visualizations pane, you have this little dot, dot, dot that allows you to import a custom visual. And then from here, I can go to this folder, and I have my aquarium PVIVs file. When I open it, it says that it's been imported, and now I have a new visual here. So now I can turn that, and that's actually not what I wanted to do. So let me go back, because I wanted to add a new visual. All right, I want a full aquarium here, and we're going to be showing the total sales by customer. So customers are going to be the fish, and then total sales will be how fat they are. And that way you can see, you know, this is our biggest customer, and as I click, you know, we do cross-highlighting and all of that stuff. Another interesting thing, actually, that we could do, I didn't cover this, but if I select something like this bar chart, I can actually go into the formatting pane and edit the interactions. So rather than cross-highlighting or filtering, I could actually configure the specific behavior that I want. So in this case, we were doing cross-highlighting on the tree map. I can configure that back to a filter, and the same goes here and the same goes here. And now as I interact with my visual elements, you see how everything else just filters down to that one. So you can override all of these out-of-the-box behaviors that we give you in case you want to do a very tailored report experience. All right, so what else I could show? I feel like I should be doing another visual, but I actually don't remember what it was. Jeez. No. Wow, I'm getting old these days. Okay, we'll leave it like this for now, and maybe we'll come back later. We'll see. What I wanted to do then is actually publish this. So we're going to be publishing our report. I'll have to save it first, so I'm going to be saving it as Ignite. And then we're going to be publishing it to the Power BI service. The first thing it tried to do is log me in. If I were not logged in already, it would be asking me for my, you know, multi-factor authentication and all of that stuff. Thank God it didn't. And now I get to pick which workspace I can save stuff to. So for those of you who've already worked with Power BI service, by default you get this My Workspace area, but then you can create additional workspaces, which think of them as like work groups. So you can add multiple people to a workspace and then have them contribute reports to it and be able to do collaboration. In this case, I'm just going to share to my workspace. This one is on the cloud. This is powerbi.com. Although, if you guys went to the reporting services session earlier today that my good friend Ricardo did, he demoed how you can actually publish Power BI desktop or PBIX reports into reporting services. He demoed it. Not that you can do it yet, but it is coming. All right, so now it's already published, and it takes me, when I go to that link, it will actually take me to my Power BI report running in the cloud, in the service, and with the same feature set, you know, all of the cross-filtering and highlighting behaviors. And then from here, I can start, you know, pinning tiles back into whichever dashboard I wanted to create to share with other users. All right, so that would do it for an end-to-end overview. I think after this, we're going to go into a bit more advanced demos. Hopefully with this, all the folks who were not up to speed with Power BI Desktop, you kind of got caught up, or that was my goal at least. So let's go and do something else. Let's go and do a demo about importing data from a web page. Actually, the only feature I'm showing today that wouldn't work if you don't have a service is what I just showed, publishing to the service. Everything else I'm doing just in the desktop locally. You don't even need to sign in to do it. So, yeah.
Uh-huh.
No, actually, so everything that I'm doing works on desktop only scenarios as well. Of course, you'd be missing on all of the service capabilities around collaboration and dashboarding and all of that, but there's no, like, you know, trimmed down version if you don't sign in or anything like that. Everything I'm going to show you here, you can do with desktop only.
And that all be portable
in SSRS? That will all work once you publish there, yeah. Yep, you bet. Alrighty, so let's talk about this second demo. I'm going to be importing some data from the web. So imagine this website. We have information about movies in 2016 and how much gross they made throughout the year, like domestic in the US. Imagine that I would like to create a report on top of this data. So I'm actually going to go to page number one. So you know the highest grossing movie this year so far is Finding Dory, and then there's Captain America and The Secret Life of Pets and so on. So with this interesting data set, I'm going to just create a report on top, right? So I'm just going to copy the URL. And we're going to go back into a new Power BI desktop file. I'm going to go to get data. And in this case, we're going to go to web. And it asked me for a URL. So I'll just pass in that URL and then click OK. And now Power BI desktop is going to go out and analyze that website, that HTML page. So that's what it's saying now. It's connecting to that web page. And it's going to present me with a list of tables that we recognize in that site, so HTML tables. Connection might not be as good as I would wish. Maybe all of you guys are just in the internet just tweeting about the reporting services, Power BI desktop support, and all of that. Yeah, let me retry this. Okay, that worked out better. Okay, great. So now I'm presenting again with the same navigator dialog that we saw before with OData, but in this case, it actually gives me a slightly different experience. We try to actually make the experience as consistent as we can across all of these data sources, so you don't need to learn yet another new data source, yet another query language, and so on. So you'll see the same experience pretty much across all of the connectors that we have today. In this case, the cool part is actually the web view. So I can enable this, and I can actually preview my table in the context. So initially, we only had the table view, and I could see something like this, but I wouldn't see the table in context. Now we actually have the web view, and it actually allows me to see and clearly identify which table I want, and even interact with the table preview to say, yeah, I want table one in this case. We're going to go and do some edit or data transformations, because the data is not quite in the shape we want. That's, you know, that's reality. So we're going to be keeping a few columns only here. I just want these four columns, and I can just right-click and say remove all of the others. And right now we're in the query editor. You see, if you look at the ribbon, that we have lots and lots of transform operations that we can apply, things like choosing columns, removing columns, filtering rows by position, by value, splitting columns, doing grouping operations, way more things here around numeric calculations, date and time operations. So we're going to be covering quite a few of these throughout the session, but I'm pretty sure you'll find things after the fact as you work on your own reports at home that you actually will find pretty valuable and like little hidden gems in this query editor experience. We're going to be doing a few changes to my data. So the first one is going to be renaming that column to title. This one is actually the total gross, so it doesn't have the theaters number on it. And then right now it's a text, so I'm going to turn that into a decimal number. All right, so now I have the graphs in a numeric form, and I have the data that I want, right? But there's a catch here. If I scroll down, and otherwise I would find out this as I load the data, I see that there's the bottom three rows here are actually not in the same shape as the rest of the table. If we go back to the original HTML page, and we go all the way to the bottom, we see these three rows down here that are actually part of the HTML table, but not really part of the data set, so we need to exclude them. I come back to the query editor, and we have a transform for that. Remove rows, and you can say remove bottom rows, and just say how many. All right, so that's my cleaned up top 100. But you might be wondering, actually, why didn't I do a keep top 100 rather than remove bottom three? The reason is that we're going to go now and import the other pages. And if you go to the last page, there's actually only 29 or 30 movies on it. So it's actually, if I did top 100, I would still get the last three rows here on the final page. So that's not going to work. OK, so how we go about making this this table that has the top 100 actually contain all of the tables, just concatenated into a single one? We could go back to our sources tab and click the edit settings button, and it brings me back to this connector page, with the web connector page. And if you notice, we have these two modes. We have basic and we have advanced. So we're going to go into advanced, and this allows me to do a bunch of additional things. For instance, instead of a single URL box, now I get the URL parts. And what I can do here is actually break down my URL into multiple pieces. So if you actually look at the URL in detail, you see that there's this get parameter here that takes the number of a page. And what I want to do actually is take this off of here. I'm going to move it to the next box. And then I'm going to actually take the subsequent get parameters, which actually I don't think I need, but I'll just keep them just in case. And I'll put them as a third and last part here. OK, so what we're left in the middle now is the number one. This is the page number that we just picked. If I actually switch this now to page 4 and click OK, we're going to recalculate the whole thing. And if I go to remove bottom rows, we'll see movies starting at the 301 rank, right? But that's not quite what I want yet. And what I can do is come back to the same advanced view here. And rather than using a static value for this, I'm going to create a query parameter, and I'm going to call it the page number. So if you see this little widget here, it allows me to say pass in a text value for the URL part or make it dependent on a parameter. And I could even create a new parameter right from here. I go create a new parameter. I'm going to call this my page number. And I'm actually going to make it a text value. I could even specify, you know, do I want to allow any value that fits the text type, which basically means pretty much everything, or do I want to define a list of accepted values, or even make it depend on another query that could be outputting a list of values, and then it would dynamically calculate the list of suggested values that we offer for the parameter. Let's stick to any value, say maybe current value is 2, and I'll click OK, and now I'll move back, and of course, we get movies starting at the 101 rank. And you see that I actually have a second query here on the left. I have table 1, which is my original query, and then I have page number, which is the parameter. And I could even change the value from here or get back to the manage parameters experience from here. But you know what I'm going to do, actually, now that I have my table 1 query referencing a parameter, I'm actually going to create a function that is based on this parameterized query, and we'll actually make the query parameter become the input for that function. So what I can do is right-click and say create function. And I can give it a name, let's say get page, and I can specify the name for the parameter, which I'm okay with page number, so I'll keep it like that. As I do that, I get this new function preview, and I get a new function query on the side with get page. And right now, I can just go and use it whatever I want, so I could say invoke, actually passing in a value, of course. So I could say invoke with 5, and it's going to give me a starting at 401. I can delete that. And by the way, I could also disable load for my table 1, because I don't really want to load that guy. OK, so now that I have get page, the hardest part of this demo is actually going to be creating a list of numbers. So I can pick the pages starting with like page 1, page 2, page 3. I could do it in two different ways. I could do it statically and go into something like the enter data experience, where I can create a table by hand, just passing in the column names and values. Or I could go and create a blank query and type some formula in the formula bar. That's what I'm going to do in this case. So I could do something like numbers from 1 to 10, let's say. And I get my list of numbers. And now I can turn this list of numbers into a table. And I can change the column type to become text. So now I have 10. And I'm going to invoke the other function over this table on a row-by-row invocation. Usually, I would have to go into the custom column dialog, for those of you who've done this before, and actually reference the other function that I created and pass in the right parameters. In September, we're adding this new feature called invoke custom function that will actually take me into this dialog where I can select from all of the user-defined functions that I have in this workbook. In this case, I just have get page. I'll be able to select one of them and then pass in the parameters that I want to use, which I could do as static values or as references to other columns from the query that I'm invoking from. In this case, I'll use column 1. When I do that, it's just going to do an invoke that function row after row, which will take a few seconds, but not enough for me to get a sip of water, so that's fine. I'll keep going. Okay, so you see that I actually get a bunch of tables and then I get a few errors. I did this intentionally. I know there were only 6 pages of data, but many times you'll want to actually say, well, I don't exactly know how many pages I want to pull, but I have a rough idea. I know there's not going to be more than 1,000 movies this year or 20,000 movies, whatever number you want. So you could always follow this approach and create a list with more numbers than the numbers that you expect. And then when you get to this point, you can go back to the Transform tab and say, actually to the Home tab, and say, I want to remove rows. I want to remove rows with errors on that column. And this will trim it down dynamically to whichever items actually return data. If you look at one of these, you'll actually see that specific page. And what we're going to do now is expand this without a prefix. And then we will just get the full table with the 529 movies on it. We can then drop column 1. And but now, the last thing here is that my column types are messed up. So I can just select them all, go to the Transform tab, and say Detect Data Type. And that will do the right type detection for me. With that, we're going to call this thing movies. And we're going to go back and close and apply. And this will reload my query and actually load the data into the data model. All right, here we are. So now that we have a table, let's go and create a couple of visuals just to end on a nice note and good visually appealing visuals. So we can have a list of studios. We can turn that into a bar chart. And we're going to bring the total gross and drop it as the value. And we can sort this by total gross. So yeah, Buena Vista was the highest grossing studio this year. We could also look at the total gross across all of the 529 movies. That's 8 billion. Let's actually format this label differently so we don't apply any display. Or actually, let's do millions. So yeah, that's about it. So quite a few. All right, and the last table I wanted to build is actually just going to do a rank. Let's turn this into a table, and then the title, and the studio, and the total gross. And let's make the text a bit larger. All right, so now we can sort by rank ascending. So yeah, if you look at Buena Vista, you see that they have Finding Dory, Captain America, and Jungle Book, and Zootopia, which are really like high-grossing movies. So no question, they're almost like doubling the overall gross made by Universal Studios. But, okay, just a little anecdote over there. So with that, we kind of cover quite a few slightly more advanced scenarios around importing data from web, parameterizing queries, creating functions, invoking them, and a few other things, right? Let's go and talk about a different aspect to Power BI Desktop, which is advanced analytics. And let's talk a little bit about how you can leverage R within Power BI and within Power BI Desktop. How many of you actually use R? All right. You know who you are. Okay, so there's a few ways that you can integrate R with Power BI. If you think about the end-to-end of creating a report, you can clearly distinguish a few different phases. There is the get data and data preparation phase, then there is the analytics and visualizations phase, and then there's the sharing. So we actually support R integrated with Power BI in 3 different phases. You can use the R connector. It was one of the items under the other list that would allow you to pass in an R script that would you'd be able to call any R library that you have installed. One note here actually is that in order to leverage these features, you need to have either RStudio, which is the open source R IDE environment, or the Microsoft R client installation. Either one of those are free. You can easily download them and run them in your machine. The moment you do that and you have Power BI Desktop installed, Power BI Desktop will recognize that environment, and when you do any of these operations that require R, it will actually call the R runtime that you have installed locally to do this. In terms of service refresh support, you will have to use the personal gateway at this point, and we're planning to eventually light this up in the enterprise gateway and even optimize. In some scenarios, we already do cloud-based refresh that does not require you to do any additional installation, but it's only for a limited set of packages that we support that. All right, so we have the R connector, and then we have the ability to create R steps within the query editor for additional cleansing and grouping and bucketing operations that you could do. And finally, you could also use any of the R visuals libraries to actually plot visuals in your plot R visuals in the report that you create with Power BI. I'm going to do a quick demo of how to actually use R within the query editor to perform R transformations. So we're going to go and create a new Power BI desktop file. And we're going to be looking at data from the European stock market. And we're going to be actually using R to fill missing values on a daily basis. You know, based on statistical and Poisson distribution libraries that R offers, we're going to be completing that series of values for every given date. We're going to actually pull this data set from a, I believe it's an Excel file. Let's see. I know the folder it is on, I don't know the file format. I think it's actually a CSV, all right. So here's my European stock markets index. We'll bring that in as a CSV file. We'll see the preview, so it has a day series that starts at day one. I don't know which year, but starts at day one. That's a data set that someone gave me. And then we have the stock market index, which has all of the filled in values on the first column, and then we artificially pulled out some values on the second one. And we're gonna be assuming that we're handling just the second column so that then we can actually fill those values in. So we're gonna go edit. All right, and now that we are in the query editor, we can access the R transform through the transform tab. I have my run R script option here on the right. And when I go in, it allows me to, well, first thing, it takes the current output of a previous step, like what you see on the preview area, as the input for my R script, as the data environment, or the data set environment. And then I need to pass in the right R scripts to use. I'm not one of those guys who actually know R, but I know how to copy-paste, and I know what it actually does. So the first line is loading the MICE library, which is the one that has all of these statistical capabilities that we're gonna be using, like the Poisson distribution and all of that stuff. And then it's gonna be, the second line is actually saying, take my temporary data that I have, or actually create this temporary data set, which is gonna be using the data set fill, which is the output of a previous step, is gonna be calling the MICE function with the following parameters. It's specifying what type of distribution to apply, what's the seed value, and how many days to look back on for like the seasonality and all of that. And then it's gonna be saying, okay, the output of that actually marked it as the complete data and give it back to me. Click OK, and as you can see there at the bottom of the dialog, it actually points to the file path where I have my R server installed, which it took a few seconds to actually load up and run. And then it gives me, as the output, it gives me the input data and then the output. I can go and click on the table for the output value to actually expand those results. And then we're gonna see basically the same columns that we had on the input, the day column and the SMI column. And then we also had the missing values, and then we completed with these values. So you can see nulls and how we completed them, which is actually not completely the exact value compared to the actual, but if we would have had more data and would have fine-tuned the algorithm, you would see that this will actually be more and more accurate, I guess, or better predictions. Okay, so with this, let's actually go and close and apply. And we're gonna be visualizing this so that you get to see actually in which cases we picked the value through the algorithm. It's loading again. Okay, good. So So we're going to go and create a line and cluster column chart. Let's make it larger. And we're going to be using the day as the shared axis. And then we're going to be using the SMI and the SMI missing values. Let's actually define a filter here. There's way too many values. So let's say less than 16, 70, and greater than, actually, 16, 20. Okay, so this starts looking better. So you see the columns where we have the SME, and then we have the SME with missing values, the black. So in the cases where you only see the blue one is the cases where we're actually going to be filling a value. Let's go and pick the completed values. Let's go back to the upper part of the formatting pane and drop it as a line value. And you see in which cases we actually filled in the values with some prediction. And so the value that we should have had was the one in blue, and this is what we actually predicted with the red. So not exactly accurate, but for instance, here as you see, the trend was going down, and somehow the algorithm was smart enough to actually predict that there was going to be a spike. In the real data, it was not as high, but it actually happened, that spike there. So if we fine-tune this algorithm and we had more input data, you could actually be making up for these gaps in your data, which do not give you full fidelity, but definitely help you with better understanding your data. And as you do analysis, it actually plays a great role. And this is just an example of one of the many things that you could do with R. There's thousands of packages, thousands of libraries out there, a really vibrant community of primarily data scientists who actually contribute with new libraries and so on. And definitely a great set of possibilities that it opens up with Power BI, not just around data cleansing and data preparation, but also when you think about all of the R visualization capabilities and all of the advanced type of visuals that you can use based on R to actually do advanced analytics rather than just reporting and visualizing data itself. Cool. With that, let's switch gears. Did I mention that I was going to do a bunch of demos? Because I still have like five more demos left, or six, I think. But the next one is going to be around report templates and query parameters. How many of you actually used report templates already with Power BI? Okay, great. So you're going to learn some new stuff. What is a report template? If you think about what it's a report, a PVIX file contains a set of queries, contains data in the data model, and it also contains a bunch of metadata in the model, things like the schema, the relationships, the measures, the calculated columns that you create, hierarchy information, and all of that. It also contains data, and it also contains the visuals. When you think about a report template has the same stuff as the PVIX, but without the actual data in the model. This is very useful on itself, because, for instance, it's also actually useful for our own team, because when someone sends us a frown and they say, yeah, I have a repro for this, but it has confidential data on it, I cannot share with you. Before, we didn't have any good answer rather than, yeah, copy-paste all of your stuff here in the frown email. Now we can actually tell them, yeah, export that as a template, send it to us. It doesn't contain any data. When we open it, it will actually ask for our credentials and everything that I need to provide in order to refresh and rehydrate that model with the data. So that's useful on itself. But the case where it actually multiplies its value, it's when you combine report templates with query parameters. And we already did a little bit of query parameters before with the page numbers, but there's way more things that you can do. For instance, you could be parameterizing server names, you could be parameterizing time ranges, you could be parameterizing specific filters by country, so you could create a report for like sales by country and then just parameterize the country value, and then as the consumer of that template opens the template, they would actually get asked for the values for those query parameters, which you could even make dynamic, as we were talking about, and it would actually allow them to provide that value and then require their own credentials, and then a new Power BI desktop report will be created based on that template, but with the actual data for that user who's running the template, who's instantiated the template. So let's go and see this in action. And in this case, I'm going to show you a different data connector. It's going to be the Exchange connector, which is also a great example for something so personal that it actually deserves to become a template. And then the user who opens it and instantiates will actually see data that's relevant to them. Just a sec. So we'll go to get data, and we go to online services, and we're going to use Exchange Online. And as I connect, it's actually going to ask me for my mailbox address. So this is where all of you actually find out my email address. It wasn't hard to guess, actually. And then it asks me for my credentials. Need to sign in. Okay, I'm currently signed in, and I click Connect. So then again, talking about consistency of experience, we get you into the same dialog, the Navigator dialog, and we give you a bunch of tables that are accessible, in this case, from Exchange. We do offer calendar, we offer mail, we offer people, tasks, and a few other things that you can actually analyze on your inbox, actually on your Exchange account. So I'm going to just pick mail. We're going to do some mail analytics. And this is the part where I ask you all to close your eyes as I remove the subject column from my preview. Okay, now it's all good. Because I just erase all of the confidential information that's in my Microsoft account. I'm pretty sure someone will just take a screenshot from the recording, but that's fine. It'll become irrelevant by the time it's published. Okay, so now we see a few different things here. We see the folder path, we see the sender information, and we see a bunch of other fields. So I'm going to be doing an analysis on email sent to me. And I do have a bunch of smart rules in Outlook that do things like sending all emails that are with my name in the tool line to a specific folder. So I'm going to be filtering down to just that. So I can actually search to me. That's the second guy. All right, so this is now narrowed down to emails that go directly to me. And I'm going to be looking at the sender information, so I want to keep that column. These guys, I can get rid of most of them. I'm going to keep the date time received. I'm going to keep the importance, and I'm going to remove that. We also have information about the attachments. You could even actually access the list of attached files, maybe even a preview of the email itself. So we'll remove that stuff and just stick to this. So right now I have all of the stuff in my folder from that list of senders. Now for each of the senders, I do have the name and the email address, but I need to expand that field. So I'm going to be using, let's say that we use both name and address. All right, and I'm going to be expanding that information. And I want to do a couple of different analytics here. The first one I want to do is look at how many emails I get per day. And then I also want to look at this by day of week and by time of the day. So I need to do a few transforms or extractions based on that date time received column that I have up here. So after I finish expanding that field, will just be a sec. Okay, good. So I'm going to go to the date time received column, and we're going to go into the add column tab, and we're going to go and look at the date operations that we offer. The first one I'm going to do is go under date, under day, actually, and I'm going to pick name of day. So that's going to give me Wednesday, Monday, and so on and so forth. So really simple to do. We used to require some custom operation here, some custom function or some custom expression to extract that value. Now you just get it out of the box, and it's all localized. Right now we are in the States, so weekday equals zero is, or equals first day of the week is Sunday. If I went running this in a Spanish build, it would actually resolve properly as well, and it would actually give me the localized name of the day as well. All right, so we're going to also extract from the time menu the specific hour. We could do a bunch of other things, right, like the start of the hour, the end of the hour. In this case, I just want the numeric value, so between 1 and 23, or 0 and 23, right? Okay, so I think that's pretty much all I need at this point. Now, I could be doing a few tricks. This is the data set that I want, but I want to parameterize this in a way that then I can export it as a template and have the user consuming that template actually provide the right the right values that they want to explore. So for instance, I could go back to the sources tab, and rather than using my email address, I could parameterize this and would say this is my email address, and it's going to be of type text, and I'm going to give you the current value. All okay? And it will just bind to that parameter. Now we could do a similar thing on the filter step that we applied when we filter by the specific, the specific folder. Now we could parameterize this from here and just give it a static value. But the other thing we could do is just go into the transform tab, or actually let's do this. Let's go to my last step, and I'm going to reference this as a new query. So when I reference it, I could even remove all of the other columns, and I have, well, actually, that won't work. Never mind. What I was going to do, actually, is reference that list and then create a binding to the parameter. I could do it, but it's only going to return me one value because I already filtered before. But OK, for the sake of doing it, let's do that. So now I can turn this into a list. I go under Transform, and I have this Convert to List button. And now I turn it into a list, which, of course, is only going to say to me right now because of a filter. But imagine that had more parameters. If I come back now to filter rows, and I go and define this as a new parameter, I'm going to create a folder. And I could say this is going to be of type text. And rather than any value or a static list of values, I'm going to say a query. And then I can bind to any query that yields a list. In this case, I have this mail-to thing. And the current value was inbox/to-me. Actually, to make it fun, we could say CC me. And you see how I mistyped the name, but all right. So that is fine. The only other thing I wanted to point out is that you could make that dynamic. And the last thing I wanted to do is actually even put a filter on a date, which you could do actually as a static list of values, like last n days, where n is a specific value, like hard-coded value. Now, I could load this data, and it would take a long time to actually load the data set because I have almost 100,000 emails directly to me over time. So I already completed this report. I'm going to show you that just for some entertainment value. Still loading. Any guesses as for how many emails I get directly to me per day? No? OK. Good. All right, so this is what it's looking like. You know, I've received since sometime in 2011, which is when they activated my Exchange online account, I've received almost 100,000 emails. I think by now I'm past that number, because given the current incoming volume, which is over 100 emails per day, I actually refreshed this, I think it was on Monday. So I'm probably over 100,000 emails received by now directly to me. So I have to go back and reply to most of them. There's some that I ignore, so I've only replied to 89,000 of them, or 89,000 times. This is a proportion of how many people are actually Microsoft employees or not. This is actually that I did based on the email address on the sender. So I split by the @ symbol, and then I kept the domain. And this is just pulling on that value. It's just saying if equals Microsoft.com, then it's a Microsoft user. Okay, these are the days with the most emails I received. Interestingly, July 21st, 2015, that was, for some reason, 3 days before the Power BI GA on July 24th last year. I don't know what happened that day, but it was busy, like 180 emails that day, or 185. All right, so a few other interesting trends here. So I got my account on Exchange Online, and I was like receiving an average of 20-something emails per day. I actually studied Microsoft as an engineer, so I didn't have as many emails as when I became a PM, which was around this time frame in September 2011. You see that spike, and then it kind of settled down a little. This depth over here is actually December 2011, which, of course, with people on holidays and so on. There was another vacation that I took here in November 2012, so it got reflected with these couple of weeks there with no data or very low incoming. And you know, like this is also December this year, like the holidays, 2015. And you can see clearly go back and see, okay, what happened this date and relate to something that happened around that time. This huge spike over here around February, March 2013 is the GA of Power Query a couple of, 3 years ago. And then this other spike over here in the early 2014, January, February, this area right here, is the GA of Power BI for Office 365. So there's a clear correlation. It's interesting and fun to actually go back and look at this. Now let's look at emails that I receive by people, specific contacts. So number one here is actually my engineering counterpart on the Power Query team. We've been working together for, I think, about 5 years now. We'll see that in a chart later on. The second one is my boss. And he actually used to be on top, but then he stopped being my boss for a couple of years. So he kind of, you know, lost the leadership there. But, you know, Tessa, who's sitting here on the first row, thanks. How many emails have you sent me since I started the session? All right. Sounds good. Now, I thought I was being, you know, like, oh, you know, my coworkers actually email me a lot. But then I look at how many emails I sent back to them, and I actually sent more emails back to them than they sent to me. So they feel good. That's the only comment that my boss said earlier this week is like, as long as I have sent him more emails, he feels fine with me making fun of this whole thing. Now let's look at how many emails I get by day and also by hour within the day. So you can see clearly that, you know, weekends are really slow. Even Fridays are slower than the rest of the days. Mondays, and especially Tuesdays and Wednesdays, are the busiest days. So if you look at specific days, you can see how, you know, I get very few emails before like 7, 8 a.m. It starts picking up at 9. There's a peak on the early afternoon. Then it goes down again. Even if I look by specific days, you can see a similar trend. Actually, for some reason, I can't cross-filter with these two charts, but it's kind of the same pattern across the board. And now you can actually look at emails between these or from these two guys, my top two senders, my boss, Faisal, and then Sid, my engineering counterpart. So a few interesting things here. As I mentioned, I was an engineer on the team initially, and then around September, I actually moved to become a PM, and I started working for Faisal. So the first 2 months, he clearly micromanaged me with a lot of emails. That's this spike. He then went, I think, you know, like probably settled down a little, just started trusting me and sending me less emails. Then I went on vacation for Christmas, you know, in December. Then I came back. In spring, he started sending me emails. Actually, early in 2012, Sid joined the team. He didn't used to be on the team. So that's when he started, and he's been kind of steady picking up, you know. This spike over here is, as we were mentioning, February 2013, that's the GA of Power Query. And then it actually went down a little, you know, summertime, picked up again around February 2014 for Power BI, for Office 365 GA, a few more months. So here's an inflection point. May 2014, what happened with Faisal that day? He actually stopped being my manager. He went work for somebody else, and I got a different manager who's not reflected here. But you can see that for the last couple of years almost, he's been, you know, like not sending me as many emails. That's the blue line there. Although Sid was still working with me day to day, and then that's when he caught up with Faisal and then passed him on the stats. And then there is this inflection point change over here in December 2015, actually in January. That's when Faisal became my manager again, and then he started picking up. And in just 1 month, he actually was able to surpass Sid on sending me more emails. And then I reminded him of this demo, which he had seen in the past. And on our last office move, he decided that I should sit next to him. And that's why his incoming stop. It is true. I'm not making this up. He does that. Tessa is here to confirm. But let's actually look at their sending patterns. It's interesting to see how Faisal is more of a morning person. He starts sending emails early in the day, and then Sid is actually likes to work at night, so I get a lot of emails from him at like 1 a.m., 2 a.m., and so on. The trends change throughout the week. Like, for instance, Saturday, they're kind of low anyways, but you know, Sid still likes to do email at, you know, Saturday after midnight. On Sundays, like, they used to pick it up in the afternoons, and mostly after dinner, like, they just spikes. And then the rest of the days is kind of a similar pattern. You know, Sid emailing at night, then Faisal gets in early in the office. And then what happens on Friday? Look at Faisal's trend. Like, this is 1 p.m. And then he just goes down from there. So, interesting data. You know, if there's a data set that you can really connect to and think about it as a personal thing, it is the Exchange one, at least for me. For other people, it will be Facebook. I guess I don't have as many friends as coworkers, so this one works out better. And the last thing that you could do here actually to complete the templates demo is that you could go and export this as a Power BI template, give it a template name and description, and then it will generate a PBIT file. So I have, this one is the PBIT file. So as you can see, it's a much smaller size than the full report because it doesn't have the actual data and the actual visuals with the aggregates already on them. It's just a definition, right? So, okay, so with that, I hope you guys got a good overview of query parameters and report templates. I have 10 minutes to go and 4 more demos, but these are the more exciting ones. This is the coming soon stuff. The first one is forecasting. I think if any of you were actually at the session on Monday that Kamal and Patrick did, they actually showed forecasting, so I'm going to show it just real quick. But forecasting has been a very highly requested feature for Power BI over the last couple of years, and we're very glad to bring a very first version of it. It's going to be available as a preview starting with the September update later this week. Because of that, you'll have to go and enable the feature under the options dialog. But I'm going to show you just how it works. I already have it enabled on this machine. So I'm going to be bringing in data from an Excel file. That's my forecast demo. And I have a Contoso data set that has data for like daily sales numbers of the last couple of years, I think. All right, so I'm going to pick a few tables here. The only one that I really need is sales. So in the interest of time, I'll just pick those two and then click load. And so forecast capabilities are going to be available from the formatting pane on line charts. So as long as you're using a line chart, you're going to be able to extend that line with forecasted data. All right, so I have my sales table here. And I have an order date. So I'll drop it there. I'm going to turn this into a line chart. And I'm going to be dropping also the sales amount. OK? Notice how, by the way, this is the visual that I was missing earlier in the previous demo overview. It's a drill down capability. So I wanted to do a drill down there with a custom hierarchy. But in this case, we also got an automatic hierarchy because it's a time dimension what I'm visualizing here. And I get these few controls here to actually go to the next level down on the hierarchy. So like, look at the data by quarters. So I'm going to go all the way down to by day. OK. Actually, I'm going to go up, and then drill everything, expand everything down. All right, so this looks like exactly what I wanted. This is the daily data for the last almost 4 years or almost 5 years, actually, of data, right? So we're going to be doing forecasting on top of this data. We're going to go to the analytics pane, the last one here. There's a lot of stuff here around trend lines, so you could do things already like the median values, the average for a given measure over a time dimension. You could also do constant lines or reference lines. This has all been in market for a few months now. But the new thing is forecast. Now I can add a forecast here, and I can configure it the way I want. So I can specify the length that I want. I can do it by points or by time dimension. So let's say, for instance, that I want data for the next 10 months. And I could even do things like ignoring the last N months, configure which level of confidence that I want for the upper and lower bounds. And then if I want to apply any seasonality. So I'm going to go apply this for just 10 months. And that's the data that it's giving me. So notice how it actually, because it took into account every data point before that, it actually continued that descending trend. If I had actually said ignore the last 5 months and apply that, it will actually ignore that decreasing trend that actually continued going up because we ignored it that time. It's interesting, actually, that we pick black as the default color for this because we're kind of saying that the future looks dark. But you can actually configure the color and make it look something more like, you know, hopeful or however you want to call it. All right, so that's forecasting, you know, coming on preview starting this week. I think the forecast is tomorrow. The next part that I wanted to show you is mobile reporting. And here, basically, we're going to go back to the overview report that we had with the fish. So today, you could already publish your Power BI desktop reports to the service and consume them from our mobile Power BI applications. But the problem with that is that most of the times when you configure a report in the desktop, you actually configure it for this form factor, like, you know, this layout, this dimension of a screen, and so on. And when you go and actually try to make an effective report for mobile, you should actually take into account many other aspects, like the form factor, the limited screen size, and so on. So what we're adding in September as a preview feature is this new layout view change. So you can change the layout and become a phone layout, and it will allow you to pick from all of the visuals that you've already defined in the full desktop report. It will allow you to start drag and dropping them. You can snap them to the grid, make them the size you want, and optimize for, you know, like the mobile display. So really easy. And right now here, this is a design view, so they're not interactive in terms of like cross-highlighting and stuff like that. But of course, once you publish them, they'll actually be. And as you click into one of the visuals in your mobile app, it will cross-filter everything according to the interactions that you have defined. Remember the cross-highlight versus cross-filter thing that I showed. So pretty cool, pretty exciting feature. It's going to be in preview starting this week as well, so you guys should check it out and play with it and give us feedback. The last two things I wanted to show you, and I have 4 minutes. One is a very requested feature for the query editor. It's the query dependencies view. So imagine this scenario. You have, where is my file? Okay, so I have this query dependencies file that has a bunch of queries on it, concretely 8 queries. And there's no clear indication here for where is my data coming from, how are these queries related between them, like are they referencing each other, are they doing like merge or append operations or stuff like that. Now we added a feature a couple years ago, to actually allow you to group stuff. So you could say, I want to move my query to a group and give it a name, so maybe I can create a group about products, and then I could drag the, I could drag this guy over here, right? And now I have my group for products, and I could create another one for orders and kind of organize my document. But it still doesn't give me an indication for the dependencies between these queries. I don't know if I change the products category, how many other queries I'm going to, you know, break or modify or impact. And that's exactly what we are adding in September. So when you go to the View tab, we're going to be adding the query dependencies option here that will bring you into this dialog. And here you can make it larger so you can see. And you can actually start understanding the dependencies and relationships between your queries in this PBIX file. So you get to see things like two data sources involved. So I had this OData feed for Northwind, and I also had this SQL Server database over here. I could click into any of the blocks to actually highlight everything that depends on it. And it's bidirectional, so if I also click something like orders by customer, it will actually find all of its ancestors, including queries and the actual data sources behind. There's also a bunch of things we can do here in terms of like layout, so we could do something like left to right. You can zoom in, zoom out, you know, all sorts of stuff. And for each of these queries, we actually offer you the type. So this is table right now, this table icon, because everything that I have loaded here are tables, but if I had functions, if I had scalar values, they will get represented here with different icons. And the other thing is whether a query is being loaded or not. So if you disable load for some of your queries, it will also get reflected here. So hopefully with that, it will make it for a much more productive and organized way of creating these complex query models and lists of queries and collections of queries in your PBIX files. We hope you guys like that. The last one thing I wanted to show you, and I have 1 minute left. So everything that I showed up until now is shipping this week. I'm going to show you something now that I don't know when it's shipping, but I hope it's shipping soon. It's IntelliSense for M, for the underlying formula language behind the query editor. So you're going to be able to do things like, say, my foo step, and start typing the name of a function, and get completions. So I want to do something like, I know it's table dot something, but if I forget that it is actually transpose, I can find it this way. And if I tab, and then I'm also going to get function help, so I get to see all of the function declarations. I get to see which parameters are allowed, and then I can specify things like, in this case, the products table that I had. So it also sees previous steps and other queries as the context. And that way, I can definitely just apply that step without having to go back to the function library reference and find that actual function and then make sure that I don't make any typos or anything like that. Of course, now if I update this, because I did just transpose my table, it's going to break up the whole thing, but it doesn't matter, right? It's I just pick one random, but it will completely break my table. All right, so I have 33 seconds left, which is perfect. I mean, I've never timed my sessions as just like, you know, this well. But just to recap, we did show you an overview of Power BI Desktop. Hopefully, all of you guys leave the room with an idea for what Desktop is for and how you can use it. We did a bunch of demos. Hopefully, you find that useful, interesting. And then we gave you a sneak preview of things that you should go play with as you get back home. With that, there's a few more related sessions. Usually, I called out here all of the sessions that are related in the conference, but I realized you guys don't have time machines. So this time, I just kept it down to the ones that are later this week. So definitely go check them out. It'll be fun. And I'll take Q&A outside because we're out of time. And thank you so much. And if you like the jokes, if you like the session, please go share an evaluation.